House Committee on Environment and Land Use. Item number one on our agenda is a possible reconsideration and work session. The chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering House Bill 2208 as amended.
Representative Richardson moves we suspend the rules for possible reconsideration of House Bill 2208 as amended. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the rules are suspended.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2208 as amended was sent to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Richardson moves we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2208 as amended was sent to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries, and the vote which sent House Bill 2208 as amended to the floor with the do-pass recommendation is reconsidered. But now the chair would entertain a motion to move House Bill 2208 to Ways and Means with the do-pass recommendation, as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move we move House Bill 2208, forward House Bill 2208 to the Ways and Means Committee with the do-pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlick moves that House Bill 2208 be sent to Ways and Means with the do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? As amended.
Yes, amended.
Any discussion? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing none, so done. So moved.
Why did we do that?
We did so.
That was really good.
Who says we don't do anything?
Well, we will close the work session on House Bill 2208. Like, what's that map thing on the computer?
Fiscal impact? Oh. Is that why we moved it over there?
Map. That's my guess.
No, anyway, you're a big help.
Sorry.
Okay, we now open a public hearing on House Bill 2533. Mr. Keller?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2533 exempts persons not required to file toxic use reduction and hazardous waste reduction plan for payment or fee for possession of hazardous substances. We heard this measure, Mr. Chair, in committee on the 13th and the 18th. The issues discussed were fee inequities and potential amendments. This has to do with that fire marshal survey where they survey approximately 48,000 business facilities annually. Mr. Chair.
Okay, and we have, David Monk, Oregon Toxics Alliance. You live more than 100 miles, Dave.
No, sir, I don't.
David, that's why you got sent to the front of the class here, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. I live in Eugene. I thought I had said no. I don't live more than 100 miles.
You clicked yes. Oh.
That's a strategy. I'll employ that in the future.
Yeah, you can see the mood of the committee now.
So. I've ruined it for myself, haven't I? Well, Mr. Chair, committee members, I've come to you. I was here both on Tuesday and Thursday last week, and was glad that you were. Well, it was unfortunate that you didn't get to it on Thursday, but nonetheless, here we are. What I'm taking issue with this this addition that's in House Bill 2533. This addition that, in fact, would exempt certain persons from paying into the Toxic Use Reduction Act into the program. From my reading of it would appear that persons can define themselves in a way that would in fact exempt virtually anyone from paying into the program. So I think this is a very poorly written and certainly not a good addition to the existing law that exists. What I'd like to do really very briefly is tell you my understanding of the program, because I think what this would basically defund the Toxic Use Reduction and Hazardous Waste reduction program, and I think it's a very valuable program, and despite what I hear a lot of business people saying is, I think when you look at the programs that are in place in, say, Massachusetts, what we're finding is that businesses are saving immense amounts of money because they don't have this hazardous waste. They don't have to dispose of this waste. They're coming up with very innovative ways to reduce their use of toxic materials. They're, in fact, reinvesting that money in their facilities and hiring new employees and increased tax base for the state. So it's this kind of approach to economic development, if you will, and to lessening the dangers to us all from the use of these materials is a very positive way to go. And we started this program back in 89. It's not been as effective as it could be. I think if anything, you should be looking to strengthen it rather than weaken it by this proposal. You know, the policies are reducing toxic use, the priority being given to finding alternatives to these toxic materials rather than purely waste management. I think in the package you were given by the speaker representing the propane industry on Thursday, had a quote in there from one of the members of the a business representative that sat in on hazardous waste working group meetings, and I was there for many of those meetings. And I think what I heard from a lot of the business folks was that the technical assistance that they were receiving was more focused on waste management rather than looking at positive ways to lessen their use of toxic materials. So I think the program has a lot of potential, and it's just not being implemented in a way that it was originally intended to. So I would encourage you certainly not to move forward with this proposal because, in fact, that will destroy the program entirely. I think rather than boring you with more information on that program, I would very much be pleased to answer any questions, to work with you if you, in fact, do go to some kind of work group on this. I know you were talking about combining 2466 with 2533, so I'd very much like to be a part of assisting in any way I can. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Monk?
Sir?
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. Yeah, your statement that... Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your statement that everybody could figure out a way to opt out under this bill of everything, how would that happen? Store a lot of propane?
Chair Gerard, Representative Greenleg, my understanding is that this, this is Oregon Revised Statutes 465.018 would allow... It basically would allow anyone to define themselves in a way that would allow them to be exempted from the requirement to pay the fee. And because not everyone is required, in fact, very few are required to file a toxic, actually to produce a toxic use reduction plan. But the program is necessary that all users and generators of hazardous waste pay into that program to fund it. And so if in fact this exemption went forward, then the program would not exist, would not have the money to go forward.
And that, just to follow up, and that in terms of the bill, what you're talking about is what's on page 18, on line 18, page 2. Any person possessing hazardous waste but not required to call a toxic use under would be exempt from this.
That is, yes. That is the addition to the existing law that I think is certainly inappropriate.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions?
Representative Action that I had, but I think it's been raised earlier than I anticipated. Mr. Monks, your testimony is directed to the exemption which amends the Act. Provide exemption under ORS 465.018. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is.
And I think you and I discussed this before we met here this morning. Is that right? And did you have an opportunity to review ORS 465.018 sub 6?
Yes, sir, I did.
All right. And I think what I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, is just to hand out a highlighted section of the statute, specifically ORS 465.018 sub 6. Mr. Monks, does that subsection state, quote, a facility shall determine whether it is required to complete a plan under subsection 1 of this section?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And is it your opinion that provides a self-exemption for a great part of the industry to avoid the imposition of these fees?
That is my reading of it, yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Give the committee a moment to... David, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Brian Dar.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Brian Doherty representing the Western States Petroleum Association. My understanding is that there is consideration by this committee to blend HB 2466 and HB 2533 into an interim study. Part of the language in that amendment that would do this would also include what is called the hazardous hazmat material response team, or the hazardous substance emergency response teams, and that program itself, which is funded by a petroleum load fee, among other things. So in the language, we have something about that. As you've been listening to, you've been talking about the hazardous substance possession fee that funds a community right to know and toxic use reduction program. There are also approximately 15 teams that are in the state of Oregon that respond to hazardous spills, either at fixed sites or on the roadways. They are funded by a $4.75 petroleum load fee, as well as responsible parties pay and others. There are some equity issues in that funding mechanism because the monies from the petroleum load fee have to be dedicated to roadway, under Article 9 of the Constitution, to roadway-related repairs and upgrades. And the determination has been that roadway spills, emergency responses there, can be used by this load fee. However, the entire program, including all costs, equipment, rolling stock, computers, what I call moon suits, all the hazardous substance suits that they use for response, are also being paid by that. And we wanted to have this interim committee look at this issue, as well as the Toxic Use Reduction and Community Right to Know program. So when some amendment language does come to you, it'll have a section indicating that the interim committee could also look at the hazardous material emergency response program. And that's all I wanted to testify on today. I'd be glad to answer questions about it. But this would be something we would like to have included in that interim study.
Any questions of Mr. Doherty? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ted Hughes?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Ted Hughes, representing the Pacific Northwest Paint Council. Paint Council is made up of paint manufacturers and retailers in the northwestern states, Washington and Oregon. We have been involved in this toxic use reduction fee for eons, ever since it was... One thing was clear, and I think you heard the testimony in both the two bills that you've heard so far, is that there's no way, in our opinion, that it can be designed to be fair, or it isn't fair. You heard testimony about that before. We believe that also. Since that is the case, and since there's arguments about that, I think the approach that the committee talked about earlier, about a interim task force, maybe manned by legislative administration, including all the stakeholders, is a great idea. Let's take another look at it. These fees have been in existence long enough. Let's see if there's any need for them. And there's arguments, there's as many arguments that there is no longer a need, for example, for the toxic use reduction part of these fees. So I'd like to see the committee sunset the toxic use reduction section. Maybe I'd like to do it right away, but let's do it in July 2005 while this interim committee takes a look at the entire fee structure, the community right to know hazardous materials structure. I think that might be a good way to do it, and then if there's justification for the unfair part of it, the tremendously unfair, the toxic use reduction part, because you heard testimony before, if I can remind you, that 48,000 people should be paying these, and 6,000 are paying them. And there's no formula that we have been able to develop to make it fairer. There was one put forward in the bill that you heard before. So let's see if it's still fair. Let's take a look at it, give it some lead time, and I respectfully suggest that we do sunset for the toxic use reduction part of that fee, and probably July 2005, so the whole next legislative body can receive the report and analyze it for yourselves. That would be my only comment, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions of Mr. Hughes?
Yes, I do, sir.
Representative Greenlee.
Your position is that the fee may or may not be useful, so we should sunset it, rather than the fee may or may not be useful, so we should look at whether it may or may not be useful.
That's correct.
Maybe you can tell me why we should sunset it, rather than just doing an interim committee that takes a look at it and then leaves the discussion up to the next.
Representative Greenlee, Mr. Chairman, I totally believe, my industry totally believes, that this toxic use reduction part of the community right to know fee has done what it set out to do in 1989. And there is no longer any need to be paying fees just for the sake of paying fees. And we're suggesting that you don't sunset it till July 2005 because it would impact the current DEQ's budget. And we don't want to do that. We like DEQ's doing a very respectable, decent job, and we want to let them continue to do that. So we don't want to take their monies away immediately. So it's just plain unfair on the surface when there's 48,000 people that should be paying it and only 6,000 people are paying it. It's time to do something about it. And the best way is to sunset it and have to study it, our opinion.
A follow-up, sir.
Follow-up?
I mean, let me say I accept your logic for a moment, which
may not be good.
It may or may not, but the issue is, if there's such a compelling case, then the right answer would inevitably come out of a study, and the evidence would be so compelling the next legislature could not fail to act on it. Since there are other people that may have an opposing position, the argument will come out if there is an interim discussion. It seemed to me we ought to let it come out and then make the decisions, rather than creating an artificial deadline by sunsetting it on the basis of an assertion that of how the study will emerge. Does that make any sense to you?
Representative Greenlee, Mr. Chairman, yes,
it does. You were very nice at dinner last night.
Yes, it does. It's just a philosophy difference between you and I. I'd rather speak to the fact that they are inequitable and they're not assessed the correct way now by demonstrating with the sunset clause that I feel that way. That would be my preference.
Thank you, sir.
Doesn't add to the bill, that's for sure.
Any other questions of Mr. Hughes? Thank you, Ted. Bob Danks? Or Danko, I'm sorry.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Apologize, Bob.
Not a problem. Members of the committee, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. I work in our Land Quality Division, and I've been doing so for a long, long time. I just want to take a minute or two of the committee's time today, if I may, to talk about toxic use reduction. It's been mentioned by all the speakers before you over the last couple of days when this bill and the previous bill, 2466, has been heard. The fire marshal's fee, the hazardous substance fee, you've been told, actually is three fees combined into one. And when a business pays the final fees, sends the check to the Department of Revenue, about 60-some percent of that money goes to the fire marshal's Community Right to Know program. Less than 20% of that money goes to what we call our orphan site account, cleaning up contaminated sites. Work, and less than 20% of that fee goes to the toxic use reduction work that we do. And so far, the only issue, as I read it, has been the toxic use reduction part. So I'm not going to talk about the DEQ's orphan site work today unless somebody wants me to. The toxic use reduction law, as you've heard, was passed in 1989, and it's officially called the Toxic Use Reduction and Hazardous Waste Reduction Act. And it's named that for a reason. It not only deals with the hazardous substances or toxics that a company uses, but it also focuses on the hazardous waste that a company generates. So it really covers both the toxic materials that a company uses, but also the waste, the hazardous waste that a company produces. The law was in 89, it was a new or different approach for DEQ, and in my mind, it was a great approach. Up until then, most of the laws had been the typical inspection compliance, command and control, DEQ go out and see if they could find violations. This law is different. This law is focused on assistance, it's focused on help, it's focused on a kind of a team approach working with businesses. In 89, it was a different approach for DEQ, but I think it's worked really well since 89 and it still is working well today. The law had two parts. The first part was to have companies that generate significant amounts of hazardous waste or companies that use significant amounts of a toxic material have to do what we call a reduction plan. And the idea is for the company to look at what it's doing and see if there's any opportunities for reduction. And our job in that, of course, is helping those companies do that. And over the years, we have some staff who have really significant expertise in dealing with hazardous substances and hazardous waste and assisting companies. The other part of the law, which is I think has been overlooked by all the other speakers, but an equal important part to us is the requirement that we provide assistance to what is called the small generators of hazardous waste. These aren't the bigger businesses that generate a lot of waste. These are the perhaps 5,000 to 8,000 businesses that generate smaller amounts of waste, but still generate hazardous waste. And the important part of the law for us is to go out there and help these companies. These companies aren't the ones that have a lot of staff or sophisticated staff or engineering staff that really know how to deal with waste. These are companies that waste is something on the side for them. It's not something that they naturally know how to deal with. And I think over the years, we have helped many, many, many businesses deal with waste and reduce the generation of hazardous waste. So that toxics law, the 89 law, really had two parts. Had the planning component for the bigger generators of waste or the bigger user of toxics and the assistance component that we've been providing. There's probably, I think, perhaps maybe 700 companies that fall under the planning side of the law. There's, like I said, 5,000 to 8,000businesses, maybe more, that fall under the assistance side of the law where we go out and proactively help them. We have a lot of success stories in this program. What I handed out to you today, there's some fact sheets that I just took off our website. that talked about some success stories. We've done basin work where we go to a river basin or go to a creek basin, and we've done it in the Salem area here, and we've done it down south, where we'll go and knock on doors. We'll knock on 150 businesses' doors in a creek basin and offer our assistance to deal with hazardous waste and to see if we can reduce the generation of hazardous waste. We found when we do that, 99% of the businesses say, fine, help us. And we go in and we see what they're doing, and we actually provide that help. A lot of our help is linking people. Well, we were at some place last week where you were doing this and they were doing this in maybe a little different way. One thing we've done over the years is utilize the experts at businesses, like the bigger electronic firms, for instance, where they're the ones who we refer people to, or they'll put on seminars for us to talk about a reduction of hazardous waste. So we knock on doors, we wait, sometimes we get called, sometimes we knock on doors, sometimes based on what an inspector sees, they'll refer something to one of our reduction specialists. And then we'll give a phone call and say, we're coming out not in any enforcement mode, not in any inspector mode, we're coming out in an assistance mode. And it's been, like I said, it's a continuing success story for us. Toxics is one of our director's priorities. Stephanie Halleck has said, DEQ really needs to address toxics. It's not going away. We really need to keep spending time on it. The question is, how are we going to do that work? And we think that this law, which is more of a a team approach, where in the assistance mode instead of the enforcement mode, this is a proper way for us to do this. Excuse me. In 1996, we had a stakeholder group like the one being discussed before you for maybe the next interim. And that stakeholder group had what we think is all the people who are involved with having to do toxic plans or having to think about how to manage hazardous waste. And we brought out of that stakeholder group, we brought a series of amendments to this law to the legislature in 1997. The legislature unanimously passed those amendments. They were basically on trying to streamline the law and make it more efficient. For instance, we included an amendment brought by Mr. Hughes and his constituents to lighten the burden that he thought that they had because of the law on the paint industry. Legislature approved that amendment. We brought forward an amendment that the legislature approved that dealt with the bigger businesses who do what we call environmental management systems, EMSs, or where the companies take a broader look at how they manage toxic and how they deal with other environmental requirements. And since that was duplicating some of the toxic use reduction law, we brought forward an amendment to exempt them from the law, and they are exempted. We also lightened the reporting burden on some of the smaller businesses in the law. So we made this 1997, what I'd say, mid-course streamlining of the law, and it passed the legislature unanimously. And we're not opposed. In fact, we'd support another look, same sort of look. Here we are, 6 years later, take a look at the law, make sure it's still applicable to where we think it needs to be applicable, and if we need to, we can come back and talk about streamlining or changing the law again. That would be fine with us. For us, though, the key is that this law was good in 89. It's been it received a kind of mid-course correction in 97. Here we are today in 2003. Reducing toxics is still important, and this is a part of our reducing toxic strategy. It's the laws are not meant to be a regulatory law. It's meant to be a assistance law and a team approach law, and I think in the year 2003, that is still appropriate. That is how we want to work with businesses. So I would really hope that the committee doesn't go in a direction to either repeal the law or sunset the law or do something else to stop us from implementing it.
Representative Ackman.
Yes, I appreciate your overview of the program. It's something I think I find informative, but I did not see that you related to the amendment of that's in HB 2533. Are you prepared to testify to that this afternoon, this morning?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I'll give you what I call my simple version of how I see this. 2466 really expanded the 5,000 fee payers that there are now to, say, 50,000 fee payers. 2533, the bill before you today, takes those same 5,000 fee payers and narrows it down to, say, 500 fee payers. So on the one hand, there's an approach to expand the base of who pays, and the other bill narrows the base who pays. The tax abuse reduction program is a $500,000 a year program. Like I said, less than 20% of what people pay on the hazardous substance fee. It's been flat at that $500,000 a year since the law passed in 1989. Back then, when we did we had to negotiate how to implement this law. Of course, we thought we needed more people to do it. We ended up getting seven people to implement this law in 1989. That same $500,000 today buys less than five people. So we're doing less in the law today than we did back when it was first passed. That $500,000, if you look at it this way, with 5,000 fee payers, you could just generalize and say they each pay $100. If you expand it to the 50,000 fee payers, like 2466 proposed, each fee payer would pay $10. And if you narrow the fee base, like 2533 proposes, each fee payer would, say, pay, instead of the $100, they'd each pay $1,000. So, you know, it gets back to, you know, how you set the base, you know, who pays, and, you know, how it affects everybody else. It's a very difficult and complex question. That's why, you know, since 89, this issue has come before the legislature in one way or another every session. And it's just very difficult to come up with a formula that pleases everybody.
Let me follow up. If I follow your testimony, it's your opinion that the exemption provided in House Bill 2533 would lower the base of fee payers from 5,000 to 500?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, that is a generalizing, but yes, because the purpose of the amendment is to only have the purpose of that language is only to have people who have to file the reduction plans pay the fee for the toxic use reduction part, that may work for that part of the law, but the other part of the law, which is a very important part of the law, is the assistance we do to the thousands of smaller businesses. And so you would get those bigger businesses, the 500 or so bigger businesses, paying for all the assistance work that we do for those smaller businesses. So again, you create another inequity.
Let me see if I follow this then. If this amendment was passed, what would be the impact on DEQ fees, just if it passed? And second question would be, how would you recoup that? Would you raise fees to other users, or you go back to the general fund for more support?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, actually, if the bill by itself passed, it wouldn't affect DEQ's funding, because what we get to implement this law comes through the budget process. And if the budget process, the legislature adopted the same $500,000 a year that it has adopted, you know, every year since the law was passed, that would direct the fire marshal to raise the $500,000. The fire marshal would then go ahead and calculate his fee system to raise $500,000. He would just use a smaller base, a smaller number of companies to do that, which means those companies each would pay substantially more than they pay today.
And do you foresee that would occur if 2533 passed, that there'd be a shifting of the fees to other users to recoup the loss that is here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, if everything else stayed the same, which may or may not happen, but if everything else stayed the same, yes.
Suppose the fire marshal decided, I'm not going to do that. I'm not mandated to do it. It's discretionary. I'm going to stay where I'm at. Again, what is the dollar fiscal impact of that if the fees aren't shifted?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, the fire marshal doesn't have that discretion. He is basically ordered, the way the law is written, he is basically required to raise the amount of money that the Ways and Means Committee and the legislature approves in the budget. So the fire marshal is ordered to go off and raise this amount of money, and then he goes ahead and does so. It's not discretionary on the fire marshal's part unless the legislature gave the fire marshal the discretion.
So if I could just conclude it with one last question, then you believe that this bill, if implemented, would not have a fiscal impact because it's your expectation the fire marshal would shift the fees to other possessors of hazardous substances?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, correct. That doesn't follow that we at DEQ think that's a good idea, but that's the result. The reason we don't think it's necessarily a good idea because those 500 or 600 companies that end up paying the fee, they're going to see their fee increased 8, 9, maybe 10-fold. And to have that big of a fee increase occur coming out of the 2003 legislature for 500 or 600 companies, I don't think in the end that's going to be good public policy.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I think we have a representative from the fire marshal's office here, do we not? Would you come up, please? Representative Ackerman, it's a very good line of questioning, and I think that if you could respond to some of those questions, we'd sure appreciate it.
Representative Gerard, my name is Bob Albers. I'm the Hazmat Services Manager for the Office of State Fire Marshal and the manager in charge of the Hazardous Substance Possession Fee Programs. Chair, Representative Ackerman, Bob is pretty much correct in his assessment of the numbers that are involved. Actually, the way that this 2533 is written, 2533 not only modifies who pays the toxic use reduction fee, it also modifies who pays the community right to know fee and the orphan site fee as well. And currently there are 6,001 companies that pay the combined hazardous substance possession fee, and that would be reduced to 472 companies. And Bob is also correct when he stated that the fees would increase anywhere from 8 to 10 fold. Actually, the way that the bill is currently written, we would not be able to increase the fees enough to fund the community right to know program because there are limitations on the fees. It's my understanding that, however, that the initiators of this particular proposal actually have an amendment that modifies the bill so that it would address the toxic use reduction portion. If a person were to file a toxic use waste reduction plan, they would be required to pay a toxic use reduction fee, and it's supposed to only come impact that toxic use reduction fee portion.
I'm trying to then my baseline question basically is that if this amendment is approved, is this revenue neutral, and the DEQ is basically taking a position that you would have the authority, if not mandated or otherwise, to realign the fee structure to make up for the potential loss of exempting these users?
Chair Gerard, Representative Ackerman, Bob again was correct in what he stated. The law states that the legislature will approve the budgets for the three programs that are funded under the hazardous substance possession fees, and that the state fire marshal will establish fee schedules to generate the revenue necessary to fund the programs. So what we would do is we would spread the cost of the three programs across 6,000 companies per year. we would go back and we would spread the cost across 472 companies. It would be revenue neutral from the standpoint that we'd have much fewer fee payers, but they'd still the programs would still be generated.
One last question, Mr. Chairman. Does your agency support House Bill 2533 as written?
Chair Gard, Representative Ackerman, the State Fire Marshal's Office, it's our understanding that that there is an intent to combine 2466, which you addressed the other day, and 2533 into a combined study to look at the total fairness equity issues surrounding the hazardous substance possession fees. Fire Marshal's Office has been assisting industry and the legislature in this endeavor since 1993 when we were first asked to take and do that, and we would be supportive of taking and helping out and providing assistance and taking a look at it and seeing if we could come up with a alternate method of taking care of the problem.
So do I take that as a yes, your agency is in opposition to 2533 as written?
Chair Gard, Representative Ackerman, the way 2533 is written right now, we are the opinion that it would cause major, major problems for the funding of the Community Right to Know program as well as the DEQ programs. As I stated, it would not generate enough revenue for the Community Right to Know program. We wouldn't like that.
Okay, thank you.
It's almost the end.
Bob, those 6,000 that are currently paying, what kind of, give us a ballpark fee they're paying on an annual basis?
Chair Gard, the hazardous substance possession fees has limitations established in statute. Community Right to Know fee ranges from $25 to $2,000. The toxic use reduction program ranges $25 to $2,000. And the orphan site fee ranges from $25 to $9,000. It actually can cap out at $9,000. And the vast majority of the fees are in the 500 to 500 or less ranges where the majority of the fees are actually being assessed at.
So it's
Representative Gard, I could actually take and give you much better numbers than that. We've actually got it broke down. I can tell you how many people pay exactly how much fee.
I'd
like that.
I think the committee would appreciate having that information. So you're saying that basically some of these people, though, that are paying an average of $500 annually could have to pay
$5,000. Representative Gard, the way that this particular bill 2533 is currently written, that is correct. They could pay a maximum of 13,000. Not very many of them are going to hit that. It would actually, what you're looking at is you're looking at compacting the cost of $5.4 million, compacting it down from 6,000 companies to 500 companies.
Now, would that reduction, if this bill were enacted and you reduced from 6,000 down to 472, what effect would that have on the State Fire Marshal's Office?
Representative Gerard, the State Fire Marshal's Office for the Community Right to Know program, the caps that are put into the legislation, we've ran some preliminary numbers, and we wouldn't be able to generate enough revenue to support the program at its current service levels, so we'd have to reduce the program.
Do you have people employed specifically in the Community Right to Know portion? In
sure.
Other words, is this going to affect you on an FTE basis?
Sure, Greg. Yes, we would. We currently have 17 FTE that is assigned to our Community Right to Know program. We collect, validate, and disseminate hazardous substance information on 48,000 companies on an annual basis. We provide that information to emergency responders, emergency managers, so that they know what hazardous substances there are in the community, so that they can properly plan for it, train for it, purchase the appropriate personal protective equipment. In addition to that, we also provide training assistance, planning and response training assistance to all local and state agencies, and the program would be impacted. Yeah, we'd have to reduce FTE.
if the budget was passed.
Any questions? Further questions of Mr. Danko or Mr. Representative Rosenbaum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a question for Bob, but I guess for either of you. And this deals with the point that Representative Ackerman was trying to raise earlier about who is actually required to file these toxic use reduction plans, and is that just a sort of an honor system, or do your agencies get involved in enforcing or determining who comes under that provision?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, it isn't really the honor system. There are some. It's pretty defined who has to do a plan, and it's based, like I said, on if your generator hazardous waste generator status, or you're based on if you report under the federal toxic release inventory law. Both of those are defined, and we have on the generator side, for instance, we have an excellent handle on who's generating hazardous waste, because they have to report their generation of hazardous waste to us, so we can see if that they're above a certain level. And we do follow up, again, like I kept stressing in the assistance mode, but we do follow up with companies who should be filing a plan and aren't. Of course, as of any law anywhere, you know, people can cheat, and so surely there's people out there who probably should be doing a plan, probably know they should be doing a plan and aren't. But I'd say almost everybody probably is doing a plan that probably needs to do one.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
But would it be fair to say there might be an additional incentive to cheat if, by not filing a plan, you got out from under a significant proportion of the fees that you were otherwise going to have to pay? I mean, that's not the case right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, perhaps, but I guess I operate from the feeling that the fees seem significant, but for most businesses, most businesses are not going to purposely, cheat to try to avoid paying a fee. Now, yeah, you may find some out there, but I don't think we don't approach things quite like that, and don't operate with that in mind, that people are definitely doing this.
Thanks.
Any further questions of our two guests?
Representative Gard, Representative Rosenbaum, just for clarification, to take and help understand the differences in the programs, the State Fire Marshal's Hazardous Substance Information Report actually helps agencies or other people involved in hazardous materials, helps them to identify where to go and do their activity. We actually identify who has it. We're not involved in the hazardous waste reporting or the planning component of this at all. Bob gets to do that.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. I see Jim Craven just walking back in. Jim? You're up.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. I was present at the creation of this dilemma in 1989, and I think, as were other people in the room, I think you've had a pretty good overview of some of the issues here. It comes down to there's two things, as you've seen through the testimony this morning. You've got a program, and what should be the scope of the program, and who should have to comply with a regulatory mandate, and then you got the money part. And I think we understood in 1989 that this was not a perfect marriage. It was not really designed to be a polluter pays or fee for service type of approach, unlike some of the regulatory things where you have a company has to go get a permit and pays a good part of the portion of doing that permit as in exchange for their ability to operate. This was really, as you heard in the previous hearing, this was an overlay on top of some other stuff purely as a way to raise some money, with the nexus really only being if you have chemicals in Oregon, you're part of the problem and you ought to pay. I mean, there's not a lot of nexus other than that for this funding mechanism. And that was judged in 1989 as an appropriate way to do this. We had these programs. We needed to fund them. This is what we came up with. Is it perfect? I think you've heard no. Is there a perfect match one-to-one between the programs and the fees? No. Are there a lot of people paying? Yes. Are there a lot more people who could possibly pay? Yes. I mean, there's lots of different approaches. And you know, I've been on two interim committees on this issue. It's probably time that we take another look at it. I'm not sure, sitting here today, that I can offer you that we could come back with a perfect solution, because any system that just says we need to fund government and you got to be part of it and you got to pay a certain amount, people are going to have differences of opinion about how much. And I don't do toxic use reduction, why should I pay for that? My company's never created an orphan site, why should I pay for that? Everybody kind of is within the community right to know program. If you have chemicals and such, there's a pretty good nexus for that program. You know, you have chemicals, we decided people need to report them. Fire marshal keeps a database. It's available to emergency responders. Your building catches fire. The fireman has your list of chemicals and knows before they go into your building what's in there. That's a pretty good nexus. The other two programs, though, it was a funding mechanism to pay for something we thought was worth doing. So, I mean, that's the dilemma that, that this whole debate raises. Possibly if smart people got in a room of goodwill, we could bring you something with less inequities, with more nexus, possibly. You know, I don't want to overpromise that there is a perfect, everyone's happy solution to this. But I think you've seen the issues out there. We certainly would not support 2533 as printed, and I think you've figured out why. You go from 6,000 people sharing a $5.5 million burden to 472 people, some of them my members, sharing a $5.4 million burden. I don't think you want to have the burden of passing that bill. But there may be some other solution. I think, echoing Mr. Danko from DEQ, parallel to this discussion, if we go a route of some kind of work group or interim committee, we will, along with DEQ, be pursuing another look at the TUR program. That's not really the issue in front of you today. You're really looking at the financing mechanism. But we do believe that program, we did a mid-course correction. We actually brought the bill in 1997 that re-scoped some of it. We think it could probably use another look. But that's really not the bill in front of you here today. But there is that connection, the money and the program. If you cut off the money for the program, I guess you don't have a program anymore. Unless we funded it with general fund, which, you know, good luck. So we are interested in both the money part of this and the program part, and we're going to be working with DEQ. We don't have a solution to bring to you right now on the TUR program and what it should be doing, separate from how you should pay for it. Because most of our companies, the high-tech companies in Oregon, believe that the TUR program is somewhat of an anachronism. It was passed in the 80s. It came at a time right after Bhopal, India, and that terrible tragedy at the Union Carbide plant. There was a lot of effort to make sure companies are doing the right thing. We think companies are, by and large, doing the right thing and have moved beyond the fairly minimal requirements of the TUR law into doing advanced environmental management systems and going beyond what this law ever envisioned. Remember, we're dreaming this up, you know, 14 years ago. So we would be interested in looking at the program part of TUR, and we'll also participate in any kind of funding study also. But you've seen that most of you are new, fairly new to this issue. If you had been here for the last 10 years, you would have had this hearing. You know, it hasn't gone away. The fact that there's a lot of issues here, and we probably need to do something about it. So. Any but questions? We do not, Representative Ackerman, we do not support 2533 as printed. Give you a sharp answer.
Any other questions of Mr. Graven? Thank you, dear. Could I have the two sponsors of the bill, Mr. Hughes and Ms. Butterfield, come up, please? Actually, they're sponsors of both 2533 and 2466.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Butterfield, you've heard the testimony this morning. What are your feelings? Both of these bills that we've looked at, putting them together, I'd like to have both you and Ted's ideas of which way you would like to go forward at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Lana Butterfield with the Northwest Propane Gas Association. I've been talking to some of my fellow stakeholders, and we would like to have a work group. Maybe put this bill on the shelf for a month and see if we can't focus on some of the funding issues. And if we can't, then we would like to go ahead with some amendments that would put together an interim study. And we have been working with Senator Messersohn to figure out how to make that study work so it wouldn't generate a fiscal impact. But I think there is enough support in the room to see if we couldn't, during this legislative session, sit down with the parties who have expressed interest and have a work group and see if there are things that could come out of it. There have been a lot of suggestions being talked about out in the hall. I'm not ready to come forward with any of those suggestions yet, but that would be my feeling.
Mr. Chair, I like that idea. I was not party to that out in the hall discussion, but I think it's an excellent way to handle it. Put it on the shelf for about 5 or 6 weeks and have a work group going on while the legislature's in session, then we'll see where we're at. I like that idea very much.
Maybe we need a public information law regarding lobbyists. More than four of you get together.
And not a bad idea. We could amend it in 2533, Mr. Chair.
Any questions of either of our guests? We'll take the work group under consideration at this point. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on 2533 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2158. And Bill Foster? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Foster. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Facilities Division. And the bill before you, House Bill 2158, is a housekeeping measure to bring up to date some of the practices and remove from the statute some outdated provisions. And I'm appearing this morning just to offer an alternative for consideration of the committee, and that is that this also could be addressed through a simple amendment to House Bill 2341 that is revising substantially Chapter 279, and this goes into that area, and we've had some discussion, and if that is an acceptable means of dealing with this, we would propose that this particular bill be dropped.
I'm sorry, I'm getting notes passed to me at the same time you concluded. This is never good. Any questions of Mr. Foster? Okay, I have a note here that says you basically would like to pull 2158 and to amend 2341 instead.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Foster.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2158. And seeing that our agenda for the morning is completed, we will adjourn this meeting of the House Committee on Environment and Land Use at 9:35.